A plane crash or a boat lost in the Mediterranean. Bodies charred beyond recognition or simply gone. The identities of the dead, however, clearly established. Lavier and Bergeron. But only one is really dead. Madame Lavier. Monsieur Bergeron is privileged. More than you ever knew. Bergeron is back in business. And as for you, you're a statistic in the Paris morgue. And you? According to the plan, I'm dead too. They expect to take me through you. Logical? We are both from Medusa, they know that. Carlos knows that. It's to be assumed you recognized me. And you me? Danjou paused. Yes, he said. As I told you, we work for different employers now. That's what I want to talk about. No talking, Delta. But for old time's sake, for what you did for us all in Tamquan, take the advice of a Medusan. Get out of Paris, or you're that dead man you just mentioned. I can't do that. You should. If I have the opportunity, I'll pull the trigger myself and be well paid for it. Then I'll give you that opportunity. Forgive me if I find that ludicrous. You don't know what I want or how much I'm willing to risk to get it. Whatever you want, you'll take risks for it. But the real danger will be your enemies. I know you, Delta. And I must get back to the switchboard. I'd wish you good hunting, but it was the moment to use the only weapon he had left, the sole threat that might keep Danjou on the line. Whom do you reach for instructions now that Parc Monceau is out? The tension was accentuated by Danjou's silence. When he replied, his voice was a whisper. What did you say? It's why she was killed, you know. Why you'll be killed, too. She went to Parc Monceau, and she died for it. You've been to Parc Monceau, and you'll die for it, too. Carlos can't afford you any longer. You simply know too much. Why should he jeopardize such an arrangement? He'll use you to trap me, then kill you and set up another Les Classiques. As one Medusan to another, can you doubt it? The silence was longer now, more intense than before. It was apparent that the older man from Medusa was asking himself several hard questions. What do you want from me? Except me. You should know hostages are meaningless. Yet you provoke me, astonish me with what you've learned. I'm no good to you, dead or alive, so what is it you want? Information. If you have it, I'll get out of Paris tonight, and neither Carlos nor you will ever hear from me again. What information? You'll lie if I ask for it now. I would. But when I see you, you'll tell me the truth. With a wire around my throat? In the middle of a crowd? A crowd? Daylight? An hour from now, outside the Louvre, near the steps, at the taxi stand. The Louvre? Crowds? Information you think I have that will send you away. You can't reasonably expect me to discuss my employer. Not yours. Mine. Treadstone? He knew. Philippe Danjou had the answer. Remain calm. Don't let your anxiety show. 71, completed Jason. Just a simple question, and I'll disappear. And when you give me the answer, the truth, I'll give you something in exchange. What could I possibly want from you? Except you. Information that may let you live. It's no guarantee. But believe me when I tell you, you won't live without it. Parc Monceau, Danjou. Silence again. Bourne could picture the gray-haired former Medusan staring at his switchboard, the name of the wealthy Paris district echoing louder and louder in his mind. There was death from Parc-Monceau, and D'Anjou knew it as surely as he knew the dead woman in Neuilly-sur-Seine was Jacqueline Lavier. "What might that information be?" asked D'Anjou. "The identity of your employer. A name and sufficient proof to have sealed in an envelope and given to an attorney, to be held throughout your natural life. But if your life were to end unnaturally, even accidentally, he'd be instructed to open the envelope and reveal the contents. It's protection, D'Anjou."
"I see," said the Medusan softly. "But you say men watch me, follow me."
"Cover yourself," said Jason. "Tell them the truth. You've got a number to call, haven't you?"
"Yes. There's a number."
"A man." The older man's voice rose slightly in astonishment. "Reach him. Tell him exactly what I said. Except for the exchange, of course. Say I contacted you, want a meeting with you. It's to be outside the Louvre in an hour. The truth."
"You're insane."
"I know what I'm doing."
"You usually did."
"You're creating your own trap, mounting your own execution. In which event, you may be amply rewarded."
"Or executed myself, if what you say is so."
"Let's find out if it is. I'll make contact with you one way or another, take my word for it. They have my photograph. They'll know it when I do. Better a controlled situation than one in which there's no control at all."
"Now I hear Delta," said D'Anjou.
"He doesn't create his own trap. He doesn't walk in front of a firing squad and ask for a blindfold."
"No, he doesn't," agreed Bourne.
"You don't have a choice, D'Anjou. 1 hour. Outside the Louvre. The success of any trap lies in its fundamental simplicity. The reverse trap, by the nature of its single complication, must be swift and simpler still." The words came to him as he waited in the taxi in Saint-Honoré down the street from Les Classiques. He had asked the driver to take him around the block twice, an American tourist whose wife was shopping in the strip of haute couture. Sooner or later she would emerge from one of the stores, and he would find her. What he found was Carlos' surveillance. The rubber-capped antenna on the black sedan was both the proof and the danger signal. He would feel more secure if that radio transmitter were shorted out, but there was no way to do it. The alternative was misinformation. Sometime during the next 45 minutes, Jason would do his best to make sure the wrong message was sent over that radio. From his concealed position in the back seat, he studied the two men in the car across the way. If there was anything that set them apart from 100 other men like them in Saint-Honoré, it was the fact that they did not talk. Philippe d'Anjou walked out onto the pavement, a gray Homburg covering his gray hair. His glances swept the street, telling Bourne that the former Medusan had covered himself. He had called a number. He had relayed his startling information. He knew there were men in a car prepared to follow him. A taxi, apparently ordered by phone, pulled up to the curb. D'Anjou spoke to the driver and climbed inside. Across the street, an antenna rose ominously out of its cradle. The hunt was on. The sedan pulled out after D'Anjou's taxi. It was the confirmation Jason needed. He leaned forward and spoke to the driver.
"I forgot," he said irritably. "She said it was the Louvre this morning, shopping this afternoon. Christ, I'm half an hour late. Take me to the Louvre, will you please?"
"Mais oui, monsieur, le Louvre."
Twice during the short ride to the monumental facade that overlooked the Seine, Jason's taxi passed the black sedan, only to be subsequently passed by it. The proximity gave Bourne the opportunity to see exactly what he needed to see. The man beside the driver in the sedan spoke repeatedly into the handheld radio microphone.
Carlos was making sure the trap had no loose spikes. Others were closing in on the execution ground. They came to the enormous entrance of the Louvre. "Get in line behind those other taxis," said Jason.
"But they wait for fares, monsieur. I have a fare. You are my fare. I will take you to the..."
"Just do as I say," said Bourne, dropping 50 francs over the seat. The driver swerved into the line. The black sedan was 20 yards away on the right. The man on the radio had turned in the seat and was looking out the left rear window. Jason followed his gaze and saw what he thought he might see. Several 100 feet to the west in the huge square was a gray automobile, the car that had followed Jacqueline Lavier and Villiers' wife to the Church of the Blessed Sacrament and sped the latter away from Rue Sarcene after she had escorted Lavier to her final confession. Its antenna could be seen retracting down into its base. Over on the right, Carlos' soldier no longer held the microphone. The black sedan's antenna was also receding. Contact had been made. Visual sighting confirmed. 4 men. These were Carlos' executioners. Bourne concentrated on the crowds in front of the Louvre entrance, spotting the elegantly dressed d'Anjou instantly. He was pacing slowly, cautiously, back and forth by the large block of white granite that flanked the marble steps on the left. Now, it was time to send the misinformation. "Pull out of the line," ordered Jason.
"What, monsieur?"
200 francs if you do exactly what I tell you. Pull out and go to the front of the line, then make 2 left turns, heading back up the next aisle.
I don't understand, monsieur.
You don't have to. 300 francs. The driver swung right and proceeded to the head of the line, where he spun the wheel, sending the taxi to the left toward the row of parked cars. Bourne pulled the automatic from his belt, keeping it between his knees. He checked the silencer, twisting the cylinder taut.
"Where do you wish to go, monsieur?"
asked the bewildered driver as they entered the aisle heading back toward the entrance to the Louvre. "Slow down," said Jason. "That large gray car up ahead, the one pointing to the Seine exit. Do you see it?"
"But of course."
"Go around it slowly, to the right." Bourne slid over to the left side of the seat and rolled down the window, keeping his head and the weapon concealed. He would show both in a matter of seconds. The taxi approached the sedan's trunk, the driver spinning the wheel again. They were parallel. Jason thrust his head and his gun into view. He aimed for the gray sedan's right rear window and fired, 5 spits coming one after another, shattering the glass, stunning the 2 men who screamed at each other, lurching below the window frames to the floor of the front seat. But they had seen him. That was the misinformation.
"Get out of here!"
yelled Bourne to the terrified driver as he threw 300 francs over the seat and wedged his soft felt hat into the well of the rear window. The taxi shot ahead toward the stone gates of the Louvre. "Now!" Jason slid back across the seat, opened the door and rolled out to the cobblestone pavement, shouting his last instructions to the driver.
"If you want to stay alive, get out of here!"
The taxi exploded forward, engine gunning, driver screaming. Bourne dove between 2 parked cars, now hidden from the gray sedan, and got up slowly, peering between the windows. Carlos' men were quick, professional, losing no moment in the pursuit. They had the taxi in view, the cab no match for the powerful sedan, and in that taxi was the target. The man behind the wheel pulled the car into gear and raced ahead as his companion held the microphone, the antenna rising from its recess. Orders were being shouted to another sedan nearer the great stone steps. The speeding taxi swerved out into the street by the Seine, the large gray car directly behind it. As they passed within feet of Jason, the expressions on the 2 men's faces said it all. They had Cain in their sights. The trap had closed, and they would earn their pay in a matter of minutes. The reverse trap, by the nature of its single complication, must be swift and simpler still. A matter of minutes. He had only a matter of moments if everything he believed was so.
D'Anjou.
The contact had played his role, his minor role, and was expendable. as Jacqueline Lavier had been expendable. Bourne ran out from between the two cars toward the black sedan. It was no more than 50 yards ahead. He could see the two men. They were converging on Philippe d'Anjou, who was still pacing in front of the short flight of marble steps. One accurate shot from either man and d'Anjou would be dead. Treadstone 71 gone with him. Jason ran faster, his hand inside his coat, gripping the heavy automatic. Carlos' soldiers were only yards away, now hurrying themselves, the execution to be quick, the condemned man cut down before he understood what was happening. "Medusa!" roared Bourne, not knowing why he shouted the name rather than d'Anjou's own. "Medusa! Medusa!" d'Anjou's head snapped up, shock on his face. The driver of the black sedan had spun around, his weapon leveled at Jason while his companion moved toward d'Anjou, his gun aimed at the former Medusan. Bourne dove to his right, the automatic extended, steadied by his left hand. He fired in midair, his aim accurate. The man closing in on d'Anjou arched backward as his stiffened legs were caught in an instant of paralysis. He collapsed on the cobblestones. Two spits exploded over Jason's head, the bullets impacting into metal behind him. He rolled to his left, his gun again steady, directed at the second man. He pulled the trigger twice. The driver screamed, an eruption of blood spreading across his face as he fell. Hysteria swept through the crowds. Men and women screamed. Parents threw themselves over children. Others ran up the steps through the great doors of the Louvre as guards tried to get outside. Bourne got to his feet, looking for d'Anjou. The older man had lunged behind the block of white granite, his gaunt figure now crawling awkwardly in terror out of his sanctuary. Jason raced through the panicked crowd, shoving the automatic into his belt, separating the hysterical bodies that stood between himself and the man who could give him the answers. Treadstone. Treadstone. He reached the gray-haired Medusan. "Get up," he ordered. "Let's get out of here."
"Tulta. It was Carlos' man. I know him. I've used him. He was going to kill me."
"I know. Come on, quickly. Others'll be coming back. They'll be looking for us. Come on." A patch of black fell across Bourne's eyes, at the corner of his eyes. He spun around, instinctively shoving d'Anjou down as four rapid shots came from a gun held by a dark figure standing by the line of taxis. Fragments of granite and marble exploded all around them. It was him. The wide, heavy shoulders that floated in space, the tapered waist outlined by a form-fitting black suit, the dark-skinned face encased in a white silk scarf below the narrow-brimmed black hat. Carlos. Get Carlos. Trap Carlos. Cain is for Charlie and Delta is for Cain. False. Find Treadstone. Find a message. For a man. Find Jason Bourne. He was going mad. Blurred images from the past converged with the terrible reality of the present, driving him insane. The doors of his mind opened and closed, crashing open, crashing shut. Light streaming out one moment, darkness the next. The pain returned to his temples with sharp, jarring notes of deafening thunder. He started after the man in the black suit with the white silk scarf wrapped around his face. Then he saw the eyes and the barrel of the gun, three dark orbs zeroed in on him like black laser beams. Bergeron? Was it Bergeron? Was it? Or Zurich? Or... no time. He feigned to his left, then dove to the right, out of the line of fire. Bullets splattered into stone, the screeches of ricochets following each explosion. Jason spun under a stationary car. Between the wheels he could see the figure in black racing away. The pain remained, but the thunder stopped. He crawled out on the cobblestones, rose to his feet, and ran back toward the steps of the Louvre. What had he done? D'Anjou was gone. How had it happened? The reverse trap was no trap at all. His own strategy had been used against him, permitting the only man who could give him the answers to escape. He had followed Carlos' soldiers, but Carlos had followed him. Since Saint-Honoré. It was all for nothing. A sickening hollowness spread through him. And then he heard the words, spoken from behind a nearby automobile. Philippe d'Anjou came cautiously into view. Tam Quan's never far away, it seems. Where shall we go, Delta? We can't stay here.
They sat inside a curtained booth in a crowded café on the Rue Pilon, a back street that was hardly more than an alley in Montmartre. D'Anjou sipped his double brandy, his voice low, pensive.
I shall return to Asia, he said. To Singapore, or Hong Kong, or even the Seychelles, perhaps. France was never very good for me. Now it's deadly.
You may not have to, said Bourne, swallowing the whiskey, the warm liquid spreading quickly, inducing a brief, spatial calm. I meant what I said. You tell me what I want to know. I'll give you... He stopped, the doubts sweeping over him. No, he would say it. I'll give you Carlos' identity.
I'm not remotely interested,
replied the former Medusan, watching Jason closely.
I'll tell you whatever I can. Why should I withhold anything? Obviously, I won't go to the authorities. But if I have information that could help you take Carlos, the world would be a safer place for me, wouldn't it? Personally, however, I wish no involvement.
You're not even curious?
Academically, perhaps. For your expression tells me I'll be shocked.
So ask your questions, and then astonish me. You'll be shocked. Without warning, D'Anjou said the name quietly.
Bergeron?
Jason did not move. Speechless, he stared at the older man. D'Anjou continued.
I've thought about it over and over again. Whenever we talk, I look at him and wonder. Each time, however, I reject the idea.
Why? Bourne interrupted, refusing to acknowledge the Medusan's accuracy.
Mind you, I'm not sure. I just feel it's wrong. Perhaps because I've learned more about Carlos from René Bergeron than anyone else. He's obsessed by Carlos. He's worked for him for years, takes enormous pride in the confidence. My problem is that he talks too much about him.
The ego speaking through the assumed second party?
It's possible, I suppose. But inconsistent with the extraordinary precautions Carlos takes, the literally impenetrable wall of secrecy he's built around himself. I'm not certain, of course. But I doubt it's Bergeron.
You said the name. I didn't.
D'Anjou smiled. You have nothing to be concerned about, Delta. Ask your questions.
I thought it was Bergeron. I'm sorry.
Don't be, for he may be.
I told you, it doesn't matter to me. In a few days I'll be back in Asia. Following the franc, or the dollar, or the yen.
We Medusans were always resourceful, weren't we?
Jason was not sure why, but the haggard face of André Villiers came to his mind's eye. He had promised himself to learn what he could for the old soldier. He would not get the opportunity again. Where does Villiers' wife fit in? D'Anjou's eyebrows arched.
Angélique? But of course. You said Parkmanceau, didn't you? How...
The details aren't important now.
Certainly not to me.
What about her, pressed Bourne?
Have you looked at her closely? The skin?
I've been close enough. She's tanned. Very tall and very tanned.
She keeps her skin that way. The Riviera, the Greek Isles, Costa del Sol, Gstaad.
She is never without a sun-drenched skin. It's very becoming. It's also a successful device. It covers what she is. For her there is no autumn or winter pallor, no lack of color in her face or arms or very long legs. The attractive hue of her skin is always there, because it would be there in any event, with or without Saint-Tropez, or the Costa Brava, or the Alps. What are you talking about? Although this stunning Angelique Villiers is presumed to be Parisian, she's not. She's Hispanic. Venezuelan, to be precise. Sanchez, whispered Bourne. Ilyich Ramirez Sanchez. Yes. Among the very few who speak of such things, it is said she is Carlos' first cousin, his lover since the age of 14. It is rumored, among those very few people, that beyond himself, she is the only person on earth he cares about. And Villiers is the unwitting drone? Words from Medusa Delta. D'Anjou nodded. Yes, Villiers is the drone. Carlos brilliantly conceived wire into many of the most sensitive departments of the French government, including the files on Carlos himself. Brilliantly conceived, said Jason, remembering. Because it's unthinkable. Totally. Bourne leaned forward. The interruption abrupt. Treadstone, he said, both hands gripping the glass in front of him. Tell me about Treadstone 71. What can I tell you? Everything they know. Everything Carlos knows. I don't think I'm capable of doing that. I hear things, piece things together, but except where Medusa's concerned, I'm hardly a consultant. Much less a confidant. It was all Jason could do to control himself, curb himself from asking about Medusa, about Delta and Tom Kwan. The winds in the night sky and the darkness and the explosions of light that blinded him whenever he heard the words. He could not. Certain things had to be assumed. His own loss passed over, no indication given. The priorities. Treadstone. Treadstone 71. What have you heard? What have you pieced together? What I heard and what I pieced together were not always compatible. Still, obvious facts were apparent to me. Such as, when I saw it was you, I knew. Delta had made a lucrative agreement with the Americans. Another lucrative agreement, a different kind than before, perhaps. Spell that out, please. 11 years ago, the rumors out of Saigon were that the ice-cold Delta was the highest-paid Medusan of us all. Surely you are the most capable I knew, so I assumed you drove a hard bargain. You must have driven an infinitely harder one to do what you're doing now. Which is, from what you've heard, what we know. It was confirmed in New York. The monk confirmed it before he died, that much I was told. It was consistent with the pattern since the beginning. Bourne held the glass, avoiding D'Anjou's eyes. The monk. The monk. Do not ask. The monk is dead, whoever and whatever he was. He is not pertinent now. I repeat, said Jason, what is it they think they know I'm doing? Come, Delta, I'm the one who's leaving. It's pointless to... Please, interrupted Bourne. Very well. You agreed to become Cain. The mythical killer with an unending list of contracts that never existed, each created out of whole cloth, given substance by all manner of reliable sources.
purpose, to challenge Carlos. Eroding his stature at every turn was the way Bergeron phrased it. To undercut his prices, spread the word of his deficiencies, your own superiority. In essence, to draw out Carlos and take him. This was your agreement with the Americans. Rays of his own personal sunlight burst into the dark corners of Jason's mind. In the distance, doors were opening, but they were still too far away and opened only partially. But there was light, where before there was only darkness. Then the Americans are... Bourne did not finish the statement, hoping in brief torment that D'Anjou would finish it for him. Yes, said the Medusan. Treadstone 71. The most controlled unit of American intelligence since the State Department's consular operations. Created by the same man who built Medusa, David Abbott. The monk, said Jason softly, instinctively, another door in the distance partially open. Of course. Who else would he approach to play the role of Cain but the man from Medusa known as Delta? As I say, the instant I saw you, I knew it. A roll. Bourne stopped, the sunlight growing brighter, warm, not blinding. D'Anjou leaned forward. It's here, of course, that what I heard and what I pieced together was incompatible. It was said that Jason Bourne accepted the assignment for reasons I knew were not true. I was there. They were not. They could not know. What did they say? What did you hear? That you were an American intelligence officer, possibly military. Can you imagine? You. Delta. The man filled with contempt for so much, not the least of which was for most things American. I told Bergeron it was impossible, but I'm not sure he believed me. What did you tell him? What I believed. What I still believe. It wasn't money. No amount of money could have made you do it. It had to be something else. I think you did it for the same reason so many others agreed to Medusa 11 years ago. To clean a slate somewhere. To be able to return to something you had before that was barred to you. I don't know, of course, and I don't expect you to confirm it, but that's what I think. It's possible you're right, said Jason, holding his breath, the cool winds of release blowing into the mists. It made sense. A message was sent. This could be it. Find the message. Find the sender. Treadstone. Which leads us back, continued D'Anjou, to the stories about Delta. Who was he? What was he? This educated, oddly quiet man who could transform himself into a lethal weapon in the jungles, who stretched himself and others beyond endurance for no cause at all. We never understood. It was never required. Is there anything else you can tell me? Do they know the precise location of Treadstone? Certainly. I learned it from Bergeron, a residence in New York City, on East 71st Street. Number 139. Isn't that correct? Possibly. Anything else? Only what you obviously know. The strategy of which I admit eludes me. Which is? That the Americans think you turned. Better phrased, they want Carlos to believe they think you turned. Why? He was closer. It was here. The story is a long period of silence coinciding with Cain's inactivity. Plus stolen funds, but mainly the silence. That was it.
The message. The silence. The months in Port Noir. The madness in Zurich. The insanity in Paris. No one could possibly know what had happened. He was being told to come in. To surface.
You were right, Marie, my love.
My dearest love. You were right from the beginning. Nothing else then? Asked Bourne, trying to control the impatience in his voice, anxious now beyond any anxiety he had known to get back to Marie.
It's all I know.
But please understand, I was never told that much. I was brought in because of my knowledge of Medusa. And it was established that Cain was from Medusa. But I was never part of Carlo's inner circle.
You were close enough.
Thank you. Jason put several bills on the table and started to slide across the booth.
There's one thing, said D'Anjou. I'm not sure it's relevant at this point.
But they know your name is not Jason Bourne.
What?
March 25th.
Don't you remember, Delta?
It's only 2 days from now. And the date's very important to Carlos. Word has been spread. He wants your corpse on the 25th. He wants to deliver it to the Americans on that day.
What are you trying to say?
On March 25th, 1968, Jason Bourne was executed at Tam Quan. You executed him.
Chapter 31. She opened the door, and for a moment he stood looking at her, seeing the large brown eyes that roamed his face, eyes that were afraid yet curious. She knew. Not the answer, but that there was an answer, and he had come back to tell her what it was. He walked into the room. She closed the door.
It happened, she said.
It happened. Bourne turned and reached for her. She came to him and they held each other, the silence of the embrace saying more than any spoken words.
You were right,
he whispered finally, his lips against her soft hair. There's a great deal I don't know, may never know,
but you were right.
I'm not Cain, because there is no Cain. There never was. Not the Cain they talk about. He never existed. He's a myth invented to draw out Carlos.
I'm that creation.
A man from Medusa, called Delta, agreed to become a line named Cain. I'm that man. She pulled back, still holding him.
Cain is for Charlie.
She said the words quietly. And Delta is for Cain, completed Jason. You've heard me say it? Marie nodded.
Yes. One night in the room in Switzerland, you shouted it in your sleep. You never mentioned Carlos, just Cain, Delta. I said something to you in the morning about it, but you didn't answer me. You just looked out the window.
Because I didn't understand. I still don't, but I accept it. It explains so many things. She nodded again.
The provocateur. The code words you use, the strange phrases, the perceptions. But why? Why you?
To clean a slate somewhere. That's what he said.
Who said?
D'Anjou.
The man on the steps in Parc Monceau? The switchboard operator?
The man from Medusa. I knew him in Medusa.
What did he say?
Bourne told her, and as he did, he could see in her the relief he had felt in himself. There was a light in her eyes, and a muted throbbing in her neck, sheer joy bursting from her throat. It was almost as if she could barely wait for him to finish so she could hold him again.
Jason,
she cried, taking his face in her hands.
Darling, my friend has come back to me. It's everything we knew, everything we felt. Not quite everything, he said, touching her cheek. I'm Jason to you, born to me, because that's the name I was given, and have to use it because I don't have any other. But it's not mine.
An invention?
No. He was real. They say I killed him in a place called Tam Quan. She took her hands away from his face, sliding them to his shoulders, not letting him go.
There had to have been a reason.
I hope so. I don't know. Maybe it's the slate I'm trying to clean.
It doesn't matter, she said, releasing him. It's in the past, over 10 years ago. All that matters now is that you reach the man at Treadstone, because they're trying to reach you.
D'Anjou said word was out that the Americans think I've turned. No word from me in over 6 months? Millions taken out of Zurich? They must think I'm the most expensive miscalculation on record.
You can explain what happened. You haven't knowingly broken your agreement. On the other hand, you can't go on. It's impossible. All the training you received means nothing to you. It's there only in fragments, images and phrases that you can't relate to anything. People you're supposed to know you don't know. Their faces without names, without reasons for being where they are or what they are.
Bourne took off his coat and pulled the automatic from his belt. He studied the cylinder, the ugly, perforated extension of the barrel that guaranteed to reduce the decibel count of a gunshot to a spit. It sickened him. He walked to the bureau, put the weapon inside, and pushed the drawer shut. He held on to the knobs for a moment, his eyes straying to the mirror, to the face in the glass that had no name. "What do I say to them?" he asked. "This is Jason Bourne calling. Of course I know that's not my name, because I killed a man named Jason Bourne, but it's the one you gave me. I'm sorry, gentlemen, but something happened to me on the way to Marseille. I lost something. Nothing you can put a price on, just my memory. Now, I gather we've got an agreement, but I don't remember what it is, except for crazy phrases like get Carlos and trap Carlos and something about Delta being Kane, and Kane is supposed to replace Charlie, and Charlie is really Carlos. Things like that, which may lead you to think I do remember. You might even say to yourselves, we've got one prime bastard here. Let's put him away for a couple of decades in a very tight stockade. He not only took us, but worse, he could prove to be one hell of an embarrassment. Bourne turned from the mirror and looked at Marie.
I'm not kidding. What do I say? The truth, she answered. They'll accept it. They've sent you a message. They're trying to reach you. As far as the 6 months is concerned, Wyatt Washburn in Port Noir. He kept records. Extensive, detailed records.
He may not answer. We had our own agreement. For putting me back together, he was to receive a fifth of Zurich, untraceable to him. I sent him $1 million.
Do you think that would stop him from helping you?
Jason paused. He may not be able to help himself. He's got a problem. He's a drunk. Not a drinker, a drunk. The worst kind. He knows it and likes it. How long can he live with $1 million? More to the point, how long do you think those waterfront pirates will let him live once they find out?
You can still prove you were there. You were ill, isolated. You weren't in contact with anyone.
How can the men at Treadstone be sure? From their view, I'm a walking encyclopedia of official secrets. I had to be to do what I've done. How can they be certain I haven't talked to the wrong people?
Tell them to send a team to Port Noir.
It'll be greeted with blank stares and silence. I left that island in the middle of the night with half the waterfront after me with hooks. If anyone down there made any money out of Washburn, he'll see the connection and walk the other way.
Jason, I don't know what you're driving at.
You've got your answer, the answer you've been looking for since you woke up that morning in Port Noir. What more do you want?
I want to be careful, that's all, said Bourne abrasively. I want to look before I leap, and make damn sure the stable door is shut, and Jack be nimble, Jack be quick, Jack jump over the candlestick, but for Christ's sake, don't fall into the fire. How's that for remembering?
He was shouting. He stopped. Murray walked across the room and stood in front of him.
It's very good. But that's not it, is it?
Being careful, I mean. Jason shook his head.
No, it isn't, he said.
With each step I've been afraid. Afraid of the things I've learned. Now, at the end, I'm more frightened than ever. If I'm not Jason Bourne, who am I really? What have I left back there? Has that occurred to you?
In all its ramifications, my darling.
In a way, I'm far more afraid than you. But I don't think that can stop us. I wish to God it could, but I know it can't. The attaché at the American Embassy on the Avenue Gabriel walked into the office of the First Secretary and closed the door. The man at the desk looked up.
You're sure it's him?
I'm only sure he used the key words, said the attaché, crossing to the desk, a red-bordered index card in his hand. Here's the flag, he continued, handing the card to the First Secretary. I've checked off the words he used, and if that flag's accurate, I'd say he's genuine. The man behind the desk studied the card. When did he use the name Treadstone? Only after I convinced him that he wasn't going to talk with anyone in U.S. intelligence unless he gave me a damn good reason. I think he thought it'd blow my mind when he said he was Jason Bourne. When I simply asked him what I could do for him, he seemed stuck, almost as if he might hang up on me.
Didn't he say there was a flag out for him?
I was waiting for it, but he never said it. According to that eight-word sketch, experienced field officer, possible defection or enemy detention, he could have just said the word flag and we would have been in sync. He didn't.
Then maybe he's not genuine.
The rest fits, though. He did say DC's been looking for him for more than 6 months. That was when he used the name Treadstone. He was from Treadstone. That's supposed to be the explosive. He also told me to relay the code words Delta, Kane, and Medusa. The first two were on the flag. I checked them off. I don't know what Medusa means.
I don't know what any of this means, said the First Secretary.
Except that my orders are to hightail it down to communications, clear all scrambler traffic to Langley, and get a sterile patch to a spook named Conklin. Him I've heard of. The mean son of a bitch who got his foot blown off 10 or 12 years ago in Nam. He pushes very strange buttons over at the company. Also, he survived the purges, which leads me to think he's one man they don't want roaming the streets looking for a job. Or a publisher.
Who do you think this Bourne is? Asked the attaché.
I've never seen such a concentrated but formless hunt for a person in my whole 8 years away from the States.
Someone they want very badly.
The First Secretary got up from the desk.
Thanks for this. I'll tell DC how well you handled it. What's the schedule? I don't suppose he gave you a telephone number.
No way. He wanted to call back in 15 minutes, but I played the harried bureaucrat. I told him to call me in an hour or so. That'd make it past 5 o'clock, so we could gain another hour or two by my being out to dinner.
I don't know. We can't risk losing him.
I'll let Conklin set up the game plan. He's the control on this. No one makes a move on Bourne unless it's authorized by him. Alexander Conklin sat behind the desk in his white-walled office in Langley, Virginia, and listened to the embassy man in Paris. He was convinced. It was Delta. The reference to Medusa was the proof, for it was a name no one would know but Delta. The bastard. He was playing the stranded agent, his controls at the Treadstone telephone not responding to the proper code words, whatever they were, because the dead could not talk.
He was using the omission to get himself off the meat hook. The sheer nerve of the bastard was awesome. Bastard. Bastard. Kill the controls and use the kills to call off the hunt. Any kind of hunt. How many men had done it before, thought Alexander Conklin? He had. There had been a source control in the hills of Huang Ke, a maniac issuing maniacal orders, certain death for a dozen teams of Medusans on a maniacal hunt. A young intelligence officer named Conklin had crept back into base camp Kilo with a North Vietnamese rifle, Russian caliber, and had fired two bullets into the head of a maniac. There had been grieving and harsher security measures put in force, but the hunt was called off. There had been no fragments of glass found in the jungle paths of base camp Kilo, however. Fragments with fingerprints that irrefutably identified the sniper as an Occidental recruit from Medusa itself. There were such fragments found on 71st Street, but the killer did not know it. Delta did not know it. At one point, we seriously questioned whether he was genuine, said the embassy's first secretary, rambling on as if to fill the abrupt silence from Washington. An experienced field officer would have told the attaché to check for a flag, but the subject didn't. An oversight, replied Conklin, pulling his mind back to the brutal enigma that was Delta Kane. What are the arrangements? Initially, Bourne insisted on calling back in 15 minutes, but I instructed lower level to stall. For instance, we could use the dinner hour. The embassy man was making sure a company executive in Washington realized the perspicacity of his contributions. It would go on for the better part of a minute. Conklin had heard too many variations before. Delta. Why had he turned? The madness must have eaten his head away, leaving only the instincts for survival. He had been around too long. He knew that sooner or later they would find him. Kill him. There was never any alternative. He understood that from the moment he turned. Or broke. Or whatever it was. There was nowhere to hide any longer. He was a target all over the globe. He could never know who might step out of the shadows and bring his life to an end. It was something they all lived with. The single most persuasive argument against turning. So another solution had to be found. Survival. The biblical Cain was the first to commit fratricide. Had the mythical name triggered the obscene decision, the strategy itself? Was it as simple as that? God knew it was the perfect solution. Kill them all. Kill your brother. Webb gone. The monk gone. The yachtsman and his wife. Who could deny the instructions Delta received, since these four alone relayed instructions to him? He had removed the millions and distributed them as ordered. Blind recipients he had assumed were intrinsic to the monk's strategy. Who was Delta to question the monk? The creator of Medusa. The genius who had recruited and created him. Cain. The perfect solution. To be utterly convincing, all that was required was the death of a brother, the proper grief to follow. The official judgment would be rendered. Carlos had infiltrated and broken Treadstone. The assassin had won, Treadstone abandoned. The bastard. So basically, I felt the game plan would come from you. The first secretary in Paris had finished. He was an ass, but Conklin needed him. One tune had to be heard while another was being played. You did the right thing, said a respectful executive in Langley. I'll let our people over here know how well you handled it. You were absolutely right. We need time, but Bourne doesn't realize it. We can't tell him either, which makes it tough. We're on sterile, so may I speak accordingly? Of course. Bourne's under pressure. He's been detained for a long period of time. Am I clear? The Soviets? Right up to the Lubyanka. His run was made by means of a double entry. Are you familiar with the term?
Yes, I am. Moscow thinks he's working for them now.
That's what they think.
Conklin paused.
And we're not sure. Crazy things happen in the Lubyanka. The first secretary whistled softly.
That's a basket. How are you going to make a determination?
With your help. But the classification priority is so high, it's above embassy, even ambassadorial level. You're on the scene. You were reached. You can accept the condition or not, that's up to you. If you do, I think a commendation might come right out of the Oval Office.
Conklin could hear the slow intake of breath from Paris.
I'll do whatever I can, of course.
Name it.
You already did. We want him stalled. When he calls back, talk to him yourself.
Naturally, interrupted the embassy man.
Tell him you relayed the codes. Tell him Washington is flying over an officer of record from Treadstone by military transport. Say D.C. wants him to keep out of sight and away from the embassy. Every route is being watched. Then ask him if he wants protection, and if he does, find out where he wants to pick it up. But don't send anyone. When you talk to me again, I'll have been in touch with someone over there. I'll give you a name then and an eye spot you can give to him.
Eye spot?
Visual identification. Something or someone he can recognize.
One of your men?
Yes, we think it's best that way. Beyond you, there's no point in involving the embassy. As a matter of fact, it's vital we don't, so whatever conversations you have shouldn't be logged.
I can take care of that, said the first secretary.
But how is the one conversation I'm going to have with him going to help you determine whether he's a double entry?
Because it won't be one. It'll be closer to 10.
10?
That's right. Your instructions to Bourne, from us, through you, are that he's to check in on your phone every hour to confirm the fact that he's in safe territory. Until that last time, when you tell him the Treadstone officer has arrived in Paris and will meet with him.
What will that accomplish? Asked the embassy man.
He'll keep moving, if he's not ours. There are a half a dozen known deep-cover Soviet agents in Paris, all with tripped phones. If he's working with Moscow, the chances are he'll use at least one of them.
We'll be watching. And if that's the way it turns out, I think you'll remember the time you spent all night at the embassy for the rest of your life.
Presidential commendations have a way of raising a career man's grade level.
Of course, you don't have too much higher to go.
There's higher, Mr. Conklin, interrupted the first secretary. The conversation was over. The embassy man would call back after hearing from Bourne. Conklin got up from the chair and limped across the room to a gray filing cabinet against the wall. He unlocked the top panel. Inside was a stapled folder containing a sealed envelope bearing the names and locations of men who could be called upon in emergencies. They had once been good men, loyal men, who for one reason or another could no longer be on a Washington payroll. In all cases, it had been necessary to remove them from the official scene, relocate them with new identities, those fluent in other languages frequently given citizenship by cooperating foreign governments. They had simply disappeared. They were the outcasts, men who had gone beyond the laws in the service of their country, who often killed in the interests of their country. But their country could not tolerate their official existence. Their covers had been exposed, their actions made known. Still, they could be called upon. Monies were constantly funneled to accounts beyond official scrutiny, certain understandings intrinsic to the payments. Conklin carried the envelope back to his desk and tore the marked tape from the flap. It would be resealed, remarked. There was a man in Paris, a dedicated man who had come up through the officer corps of Army Intelligence, a lieutenant colonel by the time he was 35. He could be counted on. He understood national priorities.
He had killed the left-wing cameraman in a village near Hu a dozen years ago. 3 minutes later, he had the man on the line, the call unlogged, unrecorded. The former officer was given a name and a brief sketch of defection, including a covert trip to the United States during which the defector in question on special assignment had eliminated those controlling the strategy.
A double entry?
Asked the man in Paris.
Moscow?
No, not Soviets, replied Conklin, aware that if Delta requested protection, there would be conversations between the two men. It was a long-range deep cover to snare Carlos.
The assassin?
That's right.
You may say it's not Moscow, but you won't convince me.
Carlos was trained in Novgorod, and as far as I'm concerned, he's still a dirty gun for the KGB.
Perhaps.
The details aren't for briefing, but suffice it to say we're convinced our man was bought off. He's made a few million and wants an unencumbered passport.
So he took out the controls and the fingers pointed at Carlos, which doesn't mean a damn thing but give him another kill.
That's it. We want to play it out. Let him think he's home free.
Best, we'd like an admission. Whatever information we can get, which is why I'm on my way over. But it's definitely secondary to taking him out. Too many people in too many places were compromised to put him where he is.
Can you help?
There'll be a bonus.
My pleasure.
And keep the bonus. I hate fuckers like him. They blow whole networks.
It's got to be airtight. He's one of the best.
I'd suggest support. At least one.
I've got a man from the Saint-Gervais worth five. He's for hire.
Hire him.
Here are the particulars.
The control in Paris is an embassy blind. He knows nothing, but he's in communication with Bourne and may request protection for him.
I'll play it, said the former intelligence officer. Go ahead.
There's not much more for the moment.
I'll take a jet out of Andrews. My ETA in Paris will be anywhere between 11 and 12 midnight your time. I want to see Bourne within an hour or so after that and be back here in Washington by tomorrow.
It's tight, but that's the way it's got to be.
That's the way it'll be then.
The blind at the embassy is the first secretary. His name is...
Conklin gave the remaining specifics, and the two men worked out basic ciphers for their initial contact in Paris. Code words that would tell the man from the Central Intelligence Agency whether or not any problems existed when they spoke.
Conklin hung up.
Everything was in motion, exactly the way Delta would expect it to be in motion. The inheritors of Treadstone would go by the book, and the book was specific where collapsed strategies and strategists were concerned. They were to be dissolved, cut off, no official connection or acknowledgement permitted. Failed strategies and strategists were an embarrassment to Washington. And from its manipulative beginnings, Treadstone 71 had used, abused, and maneuvered every major unit in the United States intelligence community and not a few foreign governments. Very long polls would be held when touching any survivors.
Delta knew all this, and because he himself had destroyed Treadstone, he would appreciate the precautions, anticipate them, be alarmed if they were